Welcome to the HR Stories Podcast, Listener Question Edition, where there is a lesson in every story. Each week, the team at HR Stories Podcast shares questions from our podcast audience and provides tangible, practical advice that everyone can use to get HR right. Our hosts today are management and HR consultants Chuck Simikian and John Tallheimer. What is on your mind today? Hey, Chuck, welcome to the HR Stories Podcast, where there is a lesson in every story. This is our question and answer. So we have, not only is there a lesson every story, but there's also a question and answer in every story. So we had some questions for you today, Chuck. I'm ready to kind of stump Chuck today.
Well, I'll go ahead and ask your first question.
All right, this one's an interesting one. It came up in one of my classes, in one of my workshops. I had an individual, Nolly from California, and he said, I have a question. Our handbook says we cannot wear anything vulgar, but we don't have anything about vulgar bumper stickers on personal vehicles. Can managers order individuals to cover their vulgar bumper stickers on their personal vehicles?
So my guess is, if I just had to put context, that the person asking the question probably had a bumper sticker on their car and they got kind of dinged for it. And they said, where's it say in the handbook that I can't have this on my car, but I can't wear anything? Wow. All right. So let me think. If I'm a business and I have a private parking lot and my customers, maybe I'm a doctor's office and my nurses and my receptionist park there, and my clients, my customers, my patients, and I have an employee with some sort of really vulgar sticker on it. I'm a pediatrician. I mean, I get that, right? I get that. And I think if it's on your private property and you have kind of a reason for it, you might be able to, but it might be hard pressed, I think, to enforce that. I don't know. That's a really great question. But if it's a public parking lot, public street, then absolutely, you're good luck. But if it's your property, people are parking on your property. And I'll give you an example that has to do with the bumper stickers. At one company that I worked for, we said no smoking on property. So people thought they could go into their car and smoke. And we were enforcing it, saying, no, there's no smoking on property. Your car is on property. You're on property. You're smoking. So people would have to get into their car, drive off property, across the street, park, and they would smoke, and then they would drive back. And that's how it was a little weird and really, really ridiculous, shall we say. But it was our property, and that's what we said. So does that answer the question?
I think it's a good thought. I think you walked through that really well and kind of gave them something to think about. I just wanted to go back to the handbook policy that says we cannot wear anything vulgar on our outfits, right? And so there's a lot of talk about this, the National Labor Relations Board. We did that whole conversation about Home Depot and the BLM and that kind of stuff. And so I do think having those strict policies in place in terms of what you're wearing is really important. You have to be consistent across the board. I think the problem is the term vulgar. What does that mean? Who does that mean it to? Right. And so you may want to be a little more specific on what that. It's so funny how you looked at that story as you thought, oh, somebody got dinged and they want to know, is that the right thing to do? I was thinking it was somebody that was walking through and was offended by a bumper sticker and was like, can I tell my boss that I'm offended by that? And am I going to get in trouble? Right. So the total opposite story in my head. And so I do think if you're right. If it's your company, you're private, you could probably say, look, you can't have that bumper sticker on there. To me, though, is that the hill you want to die on, right? Is it really that important? I don't know. Again, if a lot of employees came to me and I said, oh, we saw this bumper sticker, it really upset us, then maybe I would talk to the employee, but I don't know if I would put something in place about it. I don't know if I want to cross that line, but that's me personally. I don't know how I would handle that.
Yeah. I mean, I could see, and we'll wrap it up here, but I could see a small company with a small parking lot and, you know, people walk by the parking lot that represents us. I don't know. I could maybe just look, back your car in and let's just all be friends at the end of the day. But like you said, is that the hill you want to die on fighting for? So, all right. Yeah, no, great.
That's good. Yeah, I mean, I think those are the questions I think we face a lot of times in HR, where there's not a specific law, there's not a specific thing, and just trying to understand, like, what is the right choice for our organization? How do we be strategic about that, I think, is important. All right. Question number two, Mr. Simikian. All right. So this is Trina. She's from Chicago. I have an HR friend who was asking me about a problem supervisor who likes to limit an employee's workflow so there is no work to do on a daily basis. So the employee quits. Is this a hostile work environment? Can the employer be held liable? This has got you written all over it, Chuck.
Yes. You mean I got nothing to do and I'm going to get paid and I get so bored with my job because I'm getting so much money and not doing anything that I'm going to quit and now I'm going to sue my employer because they were hostile for making me sit here and get paid and not work? That's how I read that.
Yeah. So what's your answer?
I would say no. Is there a buzzer sound here? I don't see it as a hostile work environment.
So you would not think that was constructive discharge?
The way this is written? No. I mean, it's where you make a person's life so intolerable. So if boredom is intolerable, then yeah, I guess
They didn't say anything about boredom. You threw boredom in there. They said limited employees' workflow so that there's no work to do on a daily basis. So the employee quits.
Okay, let me back up. It depends what type of job. I guess if it were a salesperson that depends on commission or some sort of piecework job, piecework job, that if they don't have enough materials, they can't do their job, which means they're not getting paid, then that they might have some sort of actionable complaint. But if it's just like, hey, you're a receptionist and you're working till 5 o'clock today, but we're shutting the doors at 3 and we're sending all the phones to voicemail and you're just going to sit here for 2 hours and do nothing, but we're going to pay you, then you'd have a real stretch proving to the court that that was an intolerable environment. Unless, of course, while you're sitting here, we're going to open up the windows and put this garbage can next to you so all the flies buzz around.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, you know.
Yeah, no, I didn't think of it that way, but you're right, right? And so, again, if they're getting paid and their work's there, and again, there could also be the perception of, well, how is this making me look through the rest of the organization, right? And so if they're slowing my work processes down so I can't get my performance up to where it needs to be, whatever that is, then that becomes, I don't know if a hostile work environment, but it does become like, I have to quit because I'm being seen as a poor performer here because of that manager on there.
Yeah. And maybe it's the way the question's written, but maybe the manager sabotaging the employee. And that's kind of where they're going here. But I mean, I know some people, the way that they sign me up. Where do I sign up for this job?
Yeah, I mean, you're assuming they're being paid and they're getting the work done and that kind of stuff. Right. All right. Yeah, I get that. All right. I'll give you that one. I don't know. I'll give you a B+ for that. All right. B+. That's good. So this was from our Facebook group. Team at HR One, team of one HR community. And this comes from them. It's an anonymous member and said this: in my last employer, I had unlimited PTO.
Woo.
And in my previous employer, I got 5 weeks off a year. I was laid off and looking for work. This company, I got an offer from 2 weeks of PTO and 1 week of sick leave we can use for whatever. So technically 3 weeks of personal time off. Can, should I ask for additional weeks of PTO or not bother? It's accrued PTO based on years of service. Right? And so this is a good question because it's sort of really asking you, Chuck, as an HR professional, you're interviewing somebody, you give a certain amount of time off. Can I ask for that? How will that sound? How will that look?
Well, how it sounds right now is a sense of like entitlement, like, okay, 1 week of sick leave is not an extra week of PTO. Okay. It's there in case you get sick. And
No. She says, it says directly in here, Chuck, 2 weeks of PTO and 1 week of sick leave we can use for whatever.
Oh, for whatever. Okay. Yeah. So that's why I was going to say, that's why a lot of companies are getting away from sick leave. Just everything's going into the PTO bucket because it doesn't make sense. And when they say you hear sick leave you can use for whatever, or hear sick leave you can only use for sick, I guarantee you people are always finding ways to get sick to use that. So you might as well just have it pre-planned and PTO. Now, the question at hand, can I or should I ask for additional week of PTO? Yes, absolutely. Ask. Because you know what? They might say, yes, no problem. Boom, there you go. Or they might say no, and then you go on with your life. So to answer this question technically, I would say yes. Go ahead and ask for everything up front as much as you can, because you don't get it on the back end. It's all up at the front end in the negotiation.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because I think that PTO is one of the things that, I'm going to blame you HR directors, that you guys hold on to. You're like, no, this is seniority. You get it by seniority. You can't get any more. If I give it to you, then Chuck's going to be mad, John. So I can't give it to you, or Sam will be mad. Right. And so I do think, again, ask for it. I do think ask for it. I think when we're negotiating for our salary, our compensation package, we should know what we want and walk in there and go, hey, this is what we want. And I talk to a lot of people like, hey, how much should I ask for salary and that kind of stuff? So we talked about salary transparency a couple of weeks ago or last week. So that's important. But you need to do your research and go, how much is this job worth on the open market?
Yeah.
Somebody technically is buying your time, right? The company's buying your time. You need to know what that time is worth. And then you need to ask for it. And if they don't give it to you, go somewhere else that will. But you also have to think about what's really important to you. My wife and I both work as independent contractors now. But we say, look, if we ever go back, that time off is going to be much more critical to us than a large salary, right? And so I think, I mean, I don't know if you fall that way too, Chuck. But so I think kind of going in there and going, this is what I want. And I'm willing to negotiate on this part or negotiate on this part, but I really need this.
Yeah, that 1 week of PTO for your first year, 2 weeks from year 2 to 5, and that ain't going to fly. That doesn't fly anymore with a lot of people. So
yeah.
Good question, and ask. Never hurts.
Okay, good. Yeah, and definitely ask. All right, so last question in here. This is a little longer, so kind of pay attention for this, Chuck, and just kind of do that. So when should a new leader terminate poor performers? That's the question. So the ones who won't fit with the desired culture, don't deliver the desired results, or can't adjust to the required changes in the business. There are, of course, variations on the theme, but they are inevitably teed up to fit delivery and adjustment. There are also people in the organization that everyone already knows should go. My concern is someone else should move on those people before the new leader starts in his or her new role, so it doesn't look like you moved on people before giving them a chance. So basically the question is, should you have poor performers in your workplace? The manager's leaving and you're hiring a new manager. Should you get rid of those poor performers? Everyone knows the poor performers before the new manager start, or should you wait for the new manager to come in and then fire them then?
Well, as I from an HR side of things, I guess you just, you take action when it makes sense. So I don't know if you construct a situation saying, we got to clear these people out before the new person starts. I've seen that before, okay? I've seen that before. There's a gap between the former and the new person, and maybe the company owner or a department director says, I don't want the new person dealing with so-and-so. They've already spoiled the apple batch, so to speak. We need to make, you know, pull everything together and move forward. We're not going to wait until the new person gets here. We already have enough documentation to move forward. So I've seen that before, but to construct a situation to clear the house, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't sound right unless it's a burning, really bad performer. You should put a terminated them, whether there's a new manager or an old manager. What do you think? You're the leadership guru. You have a leadership consulting. That's your cornerstone.
Yeah, and so I'm glad you threw it back to me because I'm like, you got to answer it. And so I get the HR perspective, right? Well, we can do that. But to me, right, to me, I look at this and I go, well, if you're having a manager leave, right? You have a team, the team lead is leaving, and there's bad performers on that team. Well, obviously you have a bad manager. So who knows when that new manager comes in, those people may excel. They may come in and like, oh, I needed this encouragement. I talked to them better. They got better. And so I think that I can see, I agree with you. I can see it going both ways. If you have somebody that the company knows is not performing well, they should have been gotten rid of a long time ago. The manager should have taken care of them. They should have had him fired. I don't know why I know why, but I'm going to pretend I don't. I don't know why people hold on to bad performers and then complain that they're performing bad, because that's the manager's role. Your role as a manager is to get that performance up. And if you can't do it, and you're holding on to them, that's a problem.
Yeah.
But so a new manager may be just the spark, right? It may just be the spark for to get these people going. So in this case, I think it's a tough question. When should a new leader terminate poor performance? I do think, so I come in as a leader and I have a very particular way of doing business, right? And so I have the structure and this is where I'm going in, and I have somebody that doesn't follow directions. I'm going to give them a warning.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, I'm not going to mess with it. And then that person's gone on the next warning. Because if they're not going to start following my lead right away, I want to send that message that this is the way we're going to go it and just get everyone on the same page. And it's, so it may seem disheartening out there, but I do think as a new leader, you're going to create the atmosphere you want. And if you have somebody that back talks to you or does nasty things to other employees, I think you're just going to have, you're going to continue that. And you have to hold people accountable to the values that you're putting forth.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I like it. Two different perspectives, including the HR. And I think you said the HR perspective was me. Wasn't that the HR? Oh, yeah, I get the HR. But here's
what are you saying? Are you saying that I might have mumbled something under my breath about HR? I get it. I understand it. And look, I live in the world, right? I live in that world between HR and management. I live in that world of talent management. And I get the legal ramifications, and I know that we have to stress that and that kind of stuff. But sometimes it can frustrate a manager. That manager side of me comes out and gets frustrated. That's
all. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, great questions. Four great questions. We've got four today rather than the normal three. So the standard three, sometimes we get four. So this is awesome. Folks, you've been listening to the HR Stories Podcast, question and answer edition. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the HR Stories Podcast. The material presented in this podcast is for informational purposes only. Chuck and John always recommend using an employment lawyer or HR consultant to handle any legal concerns or HR issues. We do our best to double check sources and make sure the information we are providing is accurate. We may eliminate or embellish without changing the basic narrative to make the story easier to understand. In certain circumstances, we may change identifying information to protect the innocent. The HR Stories broadcast is brought to you by the team at HR Stories. The team at HR Stories is designed to help anyone with HR responsibilities be better at managing the employee experience. To engage with us, go to the HRStoriesTeam.com and learn more about how the team at HR Stories can support your business or nonprofit. Thank you for listening to the HR Stories podcast, where there is a lesson in every story.